going down into the planet.
About the Harvest Festival, since Lammas is coming up, which is one of the first of the season of Harvest Festivals. As always, you can reach us on Pal Talk at the free download at www.paltalk.com. You can send questions, comments, messages through that. You can also email me anytime at kdolan@rochester.rr.com. Talia, welcome to the show today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hi. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Harvest Festivals and how people celebrate those and what they mean. I wonder if we could do a quick overview for anybody who's not familiar with Wicca and paganism. If we could talk a little bit just about the general background of these festivals.
Just the Harvest Festivals, you mean?
Sure.
I would say that, you know, the pagan year or the Wiccan year has 8 festivals. 4 of them are the solstices and equinoxes, both winter and summer and fall and spring. And then what are called the cross-quarter days, which are, or some call them the fire festivals, which is Imbolc, which is in February, Beltane, which is May, Lammas, or Lunasa, which is August 1st, and then Samhain, or Hallows, which is November 1st. So the year wheel, we kind of use a year wheel, like the Native Americans have a medicine wheel, quartered into 4 different quarters, and then those quarters are also split in 2, so that we have 8 holidays that we celebrate. Although there's some traditions that don't celebrate all of them, some celebrate 5, you know, the more traditional ones. But generally, basically, that's kind of a standard form. And the Harvest Festivals, then, would be the 3 kind of in the bottom left-hand quadrant, I guess. That would be Lammas, starting on August 1st. Then Autumn Equinox, and the last, then, would be Samhain or Halloween. So those 3 really kind of are the festivals that have to do with this process of harvesting or gathering in before the fallow tide of winter hits us then for the next quadrant.
The Wicca and paganism are really nature-based religions.
Right, that's right.
And so when we're talking about harvest festivals, this goes back to a time when we were agricultural communities. These are very, very ancient religions. Most people listening to this probably are very familiar with it, but we may have a couple new people who are not familiar with this yet. And I find it interesting how we can take those concepts of the year, the seasons, and nature, and following the agricultural calendar, and apply them to aspects of our life that they're very modern, and they really don't have anything to do with agriculture anymore, but we can still use those concepts, the sense of starting new things in our life. And, you know, when you and I were talking about this yesterday, in fact, I was really struck when you were talking about going through the year and how things begin in early in the year with, say, Candlemas. And that was about the time that I was first invited to start doing radio, be a guest on a friend's radio program. And then about the time I was asked to have my own radio program was around the time of Beltane, when things are supposed to be coming to fruition. And I thought, oh my gosh, how funny is that? And now we're in the Harvest Festival where things are really coming to fruition, and now you and I are here together on the radio talking about them.
Right. That's true. It's kind of like, there was a book, I can't remember, I think I saw a book once that was called Everything I Know, I Learned from Gardening, or something like that, I don't know. But it was kind of like, the idea is that this symbolism, or this simile of the harvesting, you know, growing and harvesting from the earth, in the old days was very present to the people because they lived that. But it's, and even though now, you know, we don't do that anymore, we get our food from the supermarket, it's still a very relevant a system of symbols that we can use, you know, to understand our own spiritual growth as well. And even though we do buy our food in the supermarket, that doesn't mean that it still doesn't come from the earth. You know, so we tend to lose that connection with the cycles of life. And I think that causes us to kind of lose some kind of understanding about our own selves. The Wicca and pagan and Celtic paganism is very, very connected to the plant, the world of plants and trees and herbs and that kind of thing, and forests. And so those of us who follow that path can really, I think, take a lot from immersing ourselves more in understanding the cycles that live within the plant world. And the harvest festivals then are, well, I don't know, maybe since we were talking about this yesterday, maybe I should kind of give a little synopsis of that, of what I was saying. We were celebrating the eight stations of the year in a certain ritual we were doing. And kind of seeing how they make a cycle of I don't know, of mystic experience, I guess. And in the Celtic year, or in the Celtic mind philosophy, the beginning is always in darkness. You know, in ceremonial magic, the eastern quadrant is always important because that's where the sun rises, and that's seen as the beginning of the cycle. But in older Celtic or pagan thought, the beginning actually starts before that, in darkness, where you can't see it. So that would be the winter solstice, where the year would begin. Then Imbolc, which is in February, would be kind of where the first glimmer of light starts to rise. Spring equinox then is where the sun now is risen above the horizon, and you know, the warmth is returning to the land. Thing is, you know, that holiday we focus on the green sprout coming out of the earth, you know, things beginning to grow, but not yet ripe, not yet adult. Beltane is when you know, things become full, the flowers blossom, and summer is well on its way. Summer solstice is the height of summer, where things reach their highest manifestation. And then now, like Lammas, this is now the beginning of the waning tide of the year, where all that we worked on in that first cycle now has kind of come to a head, and we're gathering in the experience, gathering in what we've created, you know, discarding what wasn't so good, taking what was good, and concentrating that, like the plants do, into seeds to be planted for the next cycle. So Lammas then is the beginning, the first harvest. Autumn equinox is the last harvest, and then Samhain, of course, Hallows, is the holiday of death, where, as we see in the plant world, the seeds have been ripened, the harvest has been taken in, and whatever's left behind now goes back into the earth to be recycled for the next cycle. So, you know, I think there's a lot of benefit to be had. One could meditate upon that, I think, and seeing how our own lives follow that same cycle, and how they are cycles. They happen again every year, so that, you know, we don't ever have to be discouraged that our lives are, you know, dead or whatever, because the cycle always continues. There's always new births within death and death within birth and all of that kind of stuff.
And even when it seems like nothing much is happening in our lives and they're not going anywhere, we should remember that that's not always just a stagnant time. It might just be winter. We're just pulling on ourselves.
Right, right, and there's work to be done in every season, even in the winter time. You know, that's the time for rest, that's the time for rejuvenation, or, you know, reorganizing things for the next cycle. And so we begin to then appreciate the dark time, appreciate winter, and, you know, you and I live in a part of the country where we have long winters. So it's kind of hard to appreciate them sometimes, but you do have to see that every part of the cycle has its function.
Yeah, especially around February, it's really hard to appreciate those long winters.
Yeah, yeah. But that's why it's hopeful. Then we have our festival of Imbolc, of the new light, you know, when we really hang on to that hard. Well, spring is coming, you
yeah.
know. It will come.
I like to just fill the house with flowers and candles then.
Exactly.
Like, I need this. I need flowers and I need light.
Light. Lots of candles, yeah. And that's, well, right, because the other name for that festival is Candlemas. Where, and actually in Britain, the church celebrated these festivals. Candlemas, actually, Candlemas, was a Christian holiday, having to do with something with Mary, and I'm not an expert on that, so I don't know what.
That's Groundhog Day.
Yeah, and Groundhog Day.
I love the way it hangs on like that. You know, everyone knows February 2nd. They don't know it as Imbolc or Candlemas, but they do know that it's important.
That's true. That is true. And it's funny how those traditions are still in our psyche, in our subconscious, and they always come through somehow. You know, Groundhog. I don't know if they have groundhogs in England. If they do, maybe they have a different name.
Yeah, or I wonder if they have a different holiday.
Yeah, probably, because the climate's different over there. But Lammas, too, is a church holiday. Lofmas, it came from the Saxon, where they would bring the first bread, the first harvest, into the church to be blessed.
Okay, so did they come up with the name Lofmas because it sounds like Lammas, or is Lammas a corruption of Lofmas?
Lammas is a corruption of Lofmas.
Okay.
I'm not an expert on ancient English, Anglo-Saxon either, so I'm not sure how that happened. But the name is
easier to pronounce than Lunasa.
Right, Lunasa is Irish, because it was a festival of the god Lu, who was the god of light. So, you know, you take your pick. You can call it whatever you want. But Hallows, too, the church celebrated Hallows, you know, All Hallows Day or All Saints Day. And then there was something, too, for Beltane. I can't remember if it was called Whitsuntide or something like that, or Rudmas or something. There was some other name, too, that the church celebrated the fire festivals, the ancient Celtic fire festivals. They just, you know, churchified them.
Well, they kind of had to, because the people wouldn't stop celebrating, right?
Right, yeah, that was so ingrained in their psyche that, I don't know, it's hard to see what came first, you know, the chicken or the egg. Did they just feel that it was a religious time that had to be celebrated, or did they, you know, try to take over the older way? I don't know.
Well, I remember reading at some point, and I don't recall the name of the book or anything, but I'm sure I read that when the church began to spread into the areas, the more rural country areas, they tried to get people to stop celebrating the old pagan holidays.
Right.
And the people absolutely refused, especially in the spring when they believed that the crops would not grow unless they did these things.
That's right.
And so eventually the church compromised by saying, well, okay, just celebrate this way. You know, come to the church and celebrate with us, and then it'll be sanctioned and it'll be okay.
Yeah.
But they really tried to just stamp it out altogether at first, and that didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And there was a lot of to-do even about, like, Christmas. That was considered a Catholic holiday, and the Protestants, mm-hmm. the Puritans, didn't celebrate Christmas. And, you know, and then, you know, if you go into, like, biblical history, there are people who say, oh, well, you know, the tax records from Herod have proved that Jesus of Nazareth was born in May, you know. And so the Christmas holiday on December 25th actually has not a whole lot to do with that historical figure of Jesus of Nazareth. That was, of course, an ancient pagan holiday.
That
the church recognized, yeah, they had to kind of, you know, go with that to keep the people coming, or to co-opt their worship, I guess. I don't know.
And they kind of co-opted or overlaid the holiday in which the pagans were already celebrating the same ideas, the idea of life in the midst of death and,
right,
you know, the death and rebirth. That's a really important thing, especially around here in our upstate New York climate.
Yeah.
You know, just around the end of December, you're starting to think, oh my gosh, we've got all these months of snow.
Yep.
And, you know, every year I think about when we get our 3 feet of snow, and I look out and I think, you know, I mean, I have Wegmans now. I can just go down to the supermarket and buy whatever I need.
Right.
But I try to think about what it must have been like to live in one of those very early agricultural societies where about that time of year, you're hoping that you put away enough food last fall to last the whole community until spring.
Exactly.
And you really don't know. And it's going to be a while. I mean, many, many weeks before you know for sure who's going to live through this winter and who isn't.
Right. That's true, and that's why the Harvest Festivals were so important. And they were festivals, you know. They, as much as they could get in, that's what, you know, that's all they did, was work in the field from sunup to sundown. And I had a friend of mine once who was Korean, and she asked me, why do the Americans celebrate all these holidays all at the same time, like, you know, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's? Why don't they space them out? And I said, well, because that's based on our agricultural cycle, and coming from our English ancestors, too, is that, you know, there was nothing to do in those months, for one thing, in the fields. And it was also, they were, you know, celebrating whatever they had managed to create for the past year. You know, they were enjoying that or celebrating that they could last through another winter.
Yeah. It's also reflected in our school year. You know, there was too much to do in the summer.
Right.
The whole reason children don't go to school in the summer now.
Right.
And every year you hear somebody will bring that up, well, we should go to school all year.
Yeah, right.
And the kids are all saying no, and the teachers are saying no even louder.
Exactly.
Boy, if I were a teacher, I'd be like, I don't think so.
Right. I know, my kids are like, no way.
Absolutely. I homeschool my kids, and they still insist on summer vacation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's probably, you know, built into our psyche also. It's the energy at that time of year is very expansive. It's very free. And that's what we feel we should be doing, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. You really feel like in the summer you're supposed to not have any obligations.
Right.
You should be able to go run around outside because it's one of the few times when you can.
Right. Exactly.
In the winter, you want to hole up with whatever work you're doing.
Exactly. And that's the energy of the Earth, too. We talked a little bit about this last time, the ley lines and the Earth energy in the summer. And the Celts would talk about this as the fairy coming out of the she, coming out of the Earth at Beltane, and then going back into the Earth at Hallows, at Samhain. And that is related to the Earth energy kind of rises out of the Earth in the warm months, so that all the Earth elementals and the spiritual beings related to the Earth are among us. And then in the winter, they go back into the Earth. So our energy naturally follows that same pattern, where we feel more expansive in summer and more introspective in winter. Now, you know, we don't always live that way anymore. You know, we're, especially in America, we're like, you know, work, 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 work all year long. We don't take the opportunity to live with that cycle.
Right.
So, but that's why we feel that way in summer. It'd be like ridiculous to be in school, you know. Although I know they do that in the South because of the hot and the air conditioning and everything, but
right.
Still, it's winter time. It's like, you know, that's when we sit and we learn and we contemplate and we ponder. So
it's that time of the year. Now, I'm interested that you mentioned the ley lines and that's what the Earth energy is doing at that time. Is that what I'm trying to formulate my question here? I understand that people in the Southern Hemisphere celebrate the holidays sort of opposite. Well, because
yeah.
For them, the equinox and the solstice are different. But does that have to do with the way the Earth energy works as well? I mean, is the Earth energy cycle differently in the Southern Hemisphere?
That's a good question.
Mm.
And I don't know that I have a good answer for that. I've never been to the Southern Hemisphere. I think I would say personally I would expect that it's related more to just climate because it's warm down there, you know,
yeah.
When it's cold here. But maybe let me think. I think maybe it must because it's related to the, you know, the physical concepts of expansion and contraction. So when the Earth is warm, being closer to the sun in the Southern Hemisphere, that brings the warmth. It's the light. It's the warmth that brings the
right.
energy up out of the Earth. It's an expansion.
I wonder if there's an electromagnetic effect of being closer to the sun, if that sort of pulls the Earth energy up.
Yes, I would say it would be related to something like
okay.
that. And then
oh.
the contraction, when it's cold in the darkness, like we are in the winter, because we have, you know, more darkness. that contracts the Earth. So it'd be interesting to hear from somebody who maybe lives there and has an experience with the energy there. I couldn't say because I have never felt it, but that would be my intellectual interpretation.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I'd heard about in the Southern Hemisphere you would celebrate, you know, the summer solstice at the opposite time of the year than when we would, but I always figured that's just because that's when it's warm, and I never thought about the Earth energy being at different levels. And then when you first said it, I just got this mental picture of, like, all the Earth is just going over to one side.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably a more complicated cyclical thing than that.
Well, I suppose if it is a cycle, yeah, it would have to cycle, right? It would have to. If it were not in one area, it would be, you know, it would have to go somewhere else, right?
Right.
I don't know. It's an interesting question that I think deserves some more contemplation.
Yeah, I need to do some more studying on the ley lines. You know, I read the old Great Track. Have you ever read that?
No, I've never read it.
Okay.
I've seen excerpts from it.
Yeah.
But I've never actually read it cover to cover.
It's not the easiest read.
Yeah.
It's fascinating information, but it's, I think, because of when it was written, you know, the style of that time seems a little dry these days.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Trying to be very diplomatic.
Yeah. No, it's old English.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
you know, and too, it's kind of a different understanding of it nowadays in our modern consciousness. I think it would take a different kind of approach to get people to understand it, you know, nowadays. So, because we are very, you know, there aren't even very many people who can feel that, you know what I mean? If you go to the average guy on the street, they would think you're bonkers to talk about ley lines, you know, because we're so deeply, you know, sunken in our material manifested world that we often don't even notice the ley lines, you know, that we live that pulse among us every day.
Yeah, so few of us are able to feel that anymore. You're right. I mean, normal daily life, it's almost as if it's designed to pull us away from that.
Exactly, yeah. And then you have the electromagnetic currents of all of our technology, and I don't know how... That would be worth a study, too, to see if that affects, how that affects natural earth currents, how that affects our consciousness, I guess.
Yeah, I would think... Well, I've heard stories of people talking with ufology researchers about having done, you know, worked on top secret programs in the military, and as part of their debriefing, they sometimes have to put on these helmets, and their heads are actually flooded with electromagnetic energy, and it scrambles their memories.
Oh.
So that if, you know, once they're discharged from the service, if someone were to ask them, what did you work on, not only would they not want to reveal any secrets, but they wouldn't be able to.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's protecting national secrets and all that, but that's kind of an awful thing to do to our own citizens. But
well, yes.
Yeah.
All in the name of national protection, I guess.
Yeah.
But consider then, I mean, I don't know what level of radiation you're talking about in that circumstance, but consider the amount of electromagnetic radiation that's around us all day.
I know.
And
it makes me look sideways at my microwave.
Exactly.
And I wouldn't know how to make dinner without the thing, so it's not like I'm getting rid of it, but yeah, just looking around the house. You know, years ago, I was at a friend's house, and they were also interested in paganism and Wicca, and they showed Rich and me an experiment. They said, you can feel energy. You really can. And we did this thing where you need four people to do it. They blindfold one person, and then two people stand, they hold their hands together and form an archway with their bodies. And the fourth one guides the third. First you turn them around so they're completely disoriented. And you guide the blindfolded person so they walk across the room. And at some point they walk under the archway. And the blindfolded person is supposed to stop when they think they're under that arch.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the concept is you'll be able to feel the energy from these two people.
Yeah.
Well, when I did it, I kept stopping in the middle of the room. I was nowhere near the people. And we did it like three or four times, and I kept stopping nowhere near the people, but I was always in the same place. And we finally looked around, and I was right smack in front of the stereo.
Uh-huh.
So we said, okay, I was getting that. We finally moved into a different room, and then I stopped directly under the arch.
Yeah.
And that was the weirdest thing. That was like my first intimation that I would be able to feel something like that.
Yeah.
And I've been interested in this my whole life. You know, I was really excited. I wanted to be able to say, yeah, I would know, but I didn't really think I would.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we do it, you know, unconsciously all day long. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a, you can certainly, like, feel when somebody's looking at you, you know.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And but we just don't ever actually, you know, realize what it is that we're doing. And the interesting thing about, the stereo that you said is those, you know, they're emitting this radiation constantly. You know, they say don't put the alarm clock next to your bed, you know, next to your head while you're sleeping because the electromagnetic will give you a brain tumor or whatever.
Yeah. But, of course, we all do, so you can hit the snooze button without getting up.
Yeah, exactly. No, not me. I put it across the room for that reason and also because I turn it off and then I'm late for work.
Yeah.
So I have to get up, you know.
Yeah, every morning, I think I really should move it across the room, and then I think, but then I couldn't reach the snooze button. Oh my gosh. Oh, we just got a comment on the message board. This is interesting. Single 2-hour exposure to the microwaves emitted by some cell phones kills brain cells in rats.
Oh. Yeah, so cell phones, right. We didn't even mention that.
Yeah. And, you know, aside from holding your own cell phone up to your ear, I always wonder, you know, how much radiation, how many cell phone waves are in the air all the time?
Exactly.
I mean, we all picked up a cordless phone and cut in on someone else's conversation.
Right. And we were talking about, on one of my email lists that I have with some people who are interested in this kind of thing, we were talking about the bees, the problem with the bees, how bees are, you know, bee population is being decimated. And one of the theories that's come up is that cell phone vibrations in the air are interrupting their ability to sense their flight patterns. Because they have, like, almost a psychic sense of how, of knowing where to go and that kind of thing. And the cell phone radiation is interrupting that. That's one theory. I don't, hasn't been proven or not.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, that's interesting to think about, though, because, you know, we don't realize kind of this whole life going on around us in the air, you know.
Yeah.
Television shows and cell phone conversations.
Yeah. And on that note, we're going to hold that thought, and we're going to take a quick break. So don't anybody make any calls on your cell phones while we're on break.
Right.
They're really bad for you. Okay, everybody, we'll be right back.
Thank you. Universe, we invite you to set your perspective aside for a moment and join us on a refreshing journey into aspects of your universe that you may not have noticed from your particular point of view. Let host Jason Wilson be your guide into the corners of the universe you've never peeked into before. Who knows? You may just enjoy it and end up coming back for more. Take a stroll into the unabridged universe, live Saturdays from 7 to 9 Central Standard Time. Only on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Through the Keyhole on Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and today we're talking about Wicca and harvest festivals, and we've gotten on to talking about cell phones and bees and all sorts of really interesting things today. As always, I welcome your comments, questions on Pal Talk message board, and also you're free to email me anytime at kdolan@rochester.rr.com. My guest today is Kalia Underhill, and as I said, we're talking about Wicca, paganism, and the harvest festivals. Kalia, we were just starting to talk about the bees. Actually, we were talking about energy from cell phones and electromagnetic energy from appliances messing us all up, and we were talking about how a lot of bees populations have been dropping. People have been talking about this on websites and different radio programs for months. I did actually just hear another theory about this, that there's a certain kind of parasite that might be affecting them. So I'm sort of hopeful that it's not actually the cell phones that are causing the problem.
I've heard several different theories too. And the one about the cell phone signals was not strongly favored. I think the one about the parasite. Well, there was another one too that, which I didn't know, that a lot of farmers use bees to pollinate their crops, and there are people who supply the bees. They truck bees all over the country in these huge, like, trailers, and they'll just drive up to a farm, and they'll let the bees out, and the bees will do their pollinating, and then they'll come back into their hives, which are on this truck, and then they'll drive to another, you know, farm all over the country. And so they think that might be, like, weakening the bees' ability to navigate their migratory roots or something like that. There's several, you know, and that pesticides weaken their immune system so the mite can attack them. You know, there's several different theories. I think it's really, I don't know, that really freaks me out personally. I think that's a really bad sign, and I hope they do figure out what it is. Although yeah. I've read, I've done stuff with Waldorf and Anthroposophy and Steiner and stuff, and his movement, his gardening, or organic gardening and farm movement called biodynamics, I follow that a little bit, and they said that the organic farmers are not noticing this with the bees.
Interesting. I hadn't heard that. I thought it was all bees the problem.
The organic farmers, I mean, they have a separate problem with this Varroa mite, I think, that attacks the bees, but they aren't noticing this other problem, which is called, it's got a name, total colony collapse or something like that, where they open up the hive and they're just all dead, or they're all gone. And the organic farmers, I guess, have the people who keep bees organically are not noticing that, according to this biodynamic newsletter that I was reading. So that's just another interesting factor in the argument, I guess.
Well, there's another... Gosh, there's just so much going on in the world that so many of us really don't pay attention to. And, you know, this just strikes me as another point where we really ought to be more aware of the world around us. We ought to be getting in tune with nature. Because as much as we may like to try to turn our backs on it and say, well, I don't need that nature stuff, you know, I've got a job and I've got Starbucks and I've got all this great stuff, you know, we really do need it.
Yeah, if the bees collapse, there's no more Starbucks. There's no more coffee plants, you know?
Yeah.
Then what do we do?
Great way of putting it.
Because
most people, I've heard a lot of people say, yeah, well, bees, you know, I don't like bees anyway, they sting people. Big
right.
deal. Well, you know, if anything happens to them, it's going to happen to us.
Exactly. Interdependence of all life. You know, we really can't get away from that, even though we think we have. I think nature maybe is reminding us. Maybe, you know, is taking an opportunity to remind us that we are all interconnected.
Yeah, and one really wonderful and really fun way of getting interconnected is by observing these seasonal holidays. You know, getting back in touch with our pagan roots.
Exactly. And the interesting thing is the Celts and the Norse, too, if you see their artwork with the knot work that they were famous for, actually is a symbol of this idea that, you know, we are all connected by these interlacing and tangled lines that are very hard to follow and go through many cycles and many changes in many different beings, but like a puzzle, like a labyrinth, they connect us all together in a great web or a great net. And which is interesting considering we're talking about, you know, the cell phone signals and the satellite signals and TV signals and radio signals, because if you think about it, we're all interconnected with those too.
Yeah,
on a plane that we can't see, you know. And what's really interesting is that thousands of years ago, that's how, you know, mystics understood how we were interconnected on a psychic or a mental level with these thought vibrations that went through the air. And, you know, most people would scoff at that today, but we're all connected with our cell phone signals that fly through the air, too, that you can't see, you know. So we're not so far from that, I guess.
Yeah. Closer than we think. It's so frustrating to think about, you know, getting through a normal day, and how do you try to avoid all of these things? I can't get through a day without my cell phone.
No.
Anymore. And I resisted getting one for years.
Yeah.
And I still don't like using it, but, boy, there are just so many times when I think, oh, thank goodness I have my cell phone.
Oh, I know. And I, you know, I'm not a Luddite. I have my internet, and I have my TV and my cell phone. I use my cell phone all the time. I use it for work. There's just, like you said, there's no getting around it. We could go out, I guess, and live in a teepee. Yeah, you could do that, you know, with no technology, sure. Live off the land. But I'm not sure that's the answer. You know, I personally think that we should go forward instead of back, go forward and take what we've got and re-spiritualize it or reconnect it, you know, in a responsible way, if that can be done. You know, I don't think we can shun technology. It's here to stay, but how can we move forward ahead, you know, into our a new consciousness for humanity that perhaps includes that? I don't know.
Well, yeah, technology is part of our world today. And, you know, one thing about pagans is that they're remarkably practical. And, well, that's a Buddhist concept also. Just, you know, you take the world as it is.
Right.
And you go from there. You don't try to deny any of it.
Right.
There are certain things that maybe we want to work to limit. You know, there are certain less desirable aspects of the world the way it is. So we might want to, you know, I think some of those things are put there to see what we choose to do about them. You know, people say, well, why are bad things allowed to be? Well, I think it's because it's our job to see them and to fix them.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's like friction, you know, the negative, or I don't know if I want to say evil, but the negative part is there for us to push against, because how would we ever grow if we didn't have a resisting force pushing us? Like gravity is a resisting force.
Right.
You know, the plant has to push against gravity to push out of the ground towards the light in order to grow.
And when we exercise, even, we get our muscles get strong by pushing against it.
Exactly. If we just go with the flow, we, you know, turn to couch potatoes.
Eating our pork rinds.
Yep.
I have a few people. I'm sorry?
I said eating pork rinds, talking on the cell phone.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a few people writing onto the message board here, and they're talking about books now.
Okay.
They're interested in. It seems to be a couple people who are not real familiar with Wicca or paganism.
Okay.
And someone's referring to our previous show, and we talked about certain books that would be good introductions to people. I do want to mention, someone seems to have an idea that we talked about books that you must read and you must follow along with, and I don't want anyone to get that idea, because, you know, when we talked about books that would be good introductions, we meant introductions to the concepts. But paganism is very organic, and it's very personal, I think. And, you know, if you look at some of these books, you'll get an idea of what sort of things pagans believe and what sort of things some of them do. But you really need to look through and find things that resonate for yourself, something that really makes you feel a spiritual connection. And what were some of the books that we were talking about? I know I'm fond of Janet and Stuart Farrar.
Yeah,
they're very structured.
Well,
people really want.
Before I get started on that, when you were talking just now, you made a thought flash in my head that all books, you can learn something from all books, even bad ones. But like you said, the pagan path is very personal, and the best book to learn from, if I may speak symbolically, is the Book of Nature. Like I said before, all you need to learn about the world, you can observe by going out in nature and observing the cycles of nature. So that should be everybody's first book right there.
Yeah.
Go out and look around you. Look at how life, how nature grows. Now, after that, if you want to read another book, but like you said, you have to always keep in mind that this is the opinion of another human being. There's no gospel, there's no pagan Bible, there's no, you know.
And if we were perfect, we wouldn't be here, right?
Right. So, yes, the Farrars are good. They were kind of pioneers in this kind of thing. I think it depends, too, on what side you're coming from, because there's so many different pagan subgroups, I think, if you want to, you know, put it that way, who have kind of different tactics, different ways of approaching nature. So the Farrars are very good if you want to learn about that particular kind of English Wicca. Let's see, who else? And they too, you know, they're like Gardnerians, so you could read Doreen Valiente. She's written a lot of great books, I think, that, you know, would be along the same genre.
Yeah, she's fun just to read.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're not trying to study the topic or anything, she has a very poetic way of writing, I think.
Right, and she dishes a lot of gossip, too.
Yeah, and reading her books is like sitting down with a cup of tea with her and just chatting about people she knows. It's really fun.
What are some of the other books people are asking about?
Well, I was thinking of Starhawk.
Yeah.
You know, that's another, you know, where the Farrars are very structured and very, you know, very circumscribed. You take your candle and you walk around the circle this way, and Starhawk is sort of the opposite. And,
well, Starhawk wrote the Spiral Dance, oh, God, what now, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, which came out of her group, which is called Reclaiming, from out from San Francisco, and they kind of sprung forth from the fairy tradition, F-E-R-I, which was created by Victor and Cora Anderson. So that's another tech. That's a little bit more American. That's a little bit different than, like, the English Wicca. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of information on that on the Internet. If you Google fairy tradition or Victor Anderson, you get a lot up on that. And that's, like, that's a whole other radio show, just talking about that, you know, the differences there.
Yeah.
If you're interested more in, well, of course, there's the Frost, too. I'll dare to mention Gavin and Yvonne Frost. They're kind of a controversial figure, but they've written a lot of stuff on English craft. And then if you're more interested in more of the pagan, you know, side of it, there's zillions of books on Celtic paganism and Norse paganism and, you know,
there
whatever
so
you're interested
books
in.
Out
Italian,
there now.
Yeah.
That just blows me away. Every time I go to any bookstore, I just kind of idly glance over the pagan section. And, you know, the sections are getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And we used to have to drive, you know, a couple hours away to a specialty bookstore to find any books on paganism or Wicca.
Right.
And, boy, now they are absolutely everywhere. All the big name bookstores have a whole section on it.
Oh, yeah. Shelves of them.
Yeah, and the tarot decks.
Yep. And the, you know, and then you go to the counter and they have, like, the little tchotchkes, you know, the 365 days of tarot calendar, you know, like that.
Yep. Wow.
Personal voodoo doll kit, you know.
Yeah, I'm actually fond of those. I got one of those chocolate ones for Christmas last year.
Yeah, so I was thinking of that.
And I'm thinking, we're celebrating Christmas by giving each other chocolate voodoo doll. Huh. You know, it just gets too weird around here sometimes.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's good.
Boy, I'm trying to think of any other books, and you know what? I haven't read any recent books on paganism. I have all these old ones.
Well, it would, again, it depends on if anybody has any you know, particular topic they would want advice on, because there's just so many. There's no way I could sit and list them all. It really depends on where you want to start. The Farrars are a good place to start. Starhawk's a good place to start. Vivian Crowley is a good place to start.
Yeah.
She wrote
a book called, not to be confused with Alistair.
Not related to Alistair Crowley, no.
Who is maybe not the best place to start.
Not the best place to start, no. I don't know. You probably get a lot of arguments on that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are very devoted to Crowley and OTO and all that stuff, so I don't want to step on their toes. But
no, and I certainly don't want to say that any of Aleister Crowley's work is not of value, but I'm not sure it's the best place for someone who doesn't know anything about this to begin.
Yeah, and really, that's not, if you're looking for Wicca or paganism or nature-based religions, that's not.
Yeah, that's not really what he was into.
No.
If you're into more ceremonial magic, that's what
right.
he did. But his work is very complex,
and
it's very valuable if you're into that.
Yes. That's a whole different,
It's a whole different way of looking at the world.
Yeah. I was going to say, same church, different pew, but I'm not even sure it's that.
I don't think so.
So, different church, different pew, different.
Yeah.
And it's so complex that it would probably turn a lot of people off, because it's just hard to get into. There's a lot to be memorized and stuff like that, so I don't recommend that. Let me think. Well, if you go to the, you know, the Llewellyn book site, I don't know if I'm allowed to plug the Llewellyn label, but they, you know, that would be a good place for a beginner to start with. Again, there's just a book, you know, they publish a book on anything, everything, so kind of pick and choose, I guess, what you really, really want to learn about.
They do those really great almanacs, too. I love those things. which is almanac, so they tell you, it's like the farmer's almanac, only they tell you not only the moon phases on different days, but like what kind of cells are good to be working on certain days.
Right, and the different holidays.
Yeah.
For religions all over the world, I mean, we're talking about, you know, Celtic paganism, but paganism is not, you know, something that's just related to, you know, the British Isles. It's a way of, paganism really, pagan of course means person from the country. It's about someone who lives close to nature. And those people live close to nature all over the world. If you go to Japan, you know, and you study Shinto, it's the same thing. Or Yoruba in West Africa, or, you know, the shamans of Siberia. It's all the same mindset, the same way of living. It's just that, you know, I'm particularly involved in this cultural manifestation of it in the Celtic or the Norse.
Yeah,
you know, what my ancestors practiced.
Right, see, that appeals to me because I have the Celtic background.
Right.
So, yeah, that is something that I'm interested in. It's something that resonates for me. Now,
right.
If I were of Asian descent, I might not feel that way.
Right, it may not resonate with you at all, you know. And the beauty of that, I guess, is that in every country, you can find your ancestral roots, no matter what. You know, I'd love to meet somebody who is like Finnish and could talk about the Lapland shamans. You know, that fascinates me. But I don't know anybody who's Finnish.
Yeah.
You know, the Chinese had their sorcerers, and you know, every culture had them. It's just, I guess what's interesting about our particular Western European tradition is that, you know, we had that whole interruption there where we were being decimated by the Inquisition, and so we're trying to regain a lot of that, I guess, but
yeah.
It still exists all over the world, so. And you can find books on it, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, you can find books on anything nowadays. I love that.
Yep.
Somebody's asking about voodoo on the board. I actually don't know very much about voodoo. Not really my thing.
I know about it intellectually. I don't practice it because that doesn't resonate with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've studied some. I've studied hoodoo and voodoo. And I have a student of mine actually used to live in New Orleans, and even though she's white, Irish descent, she's very interested in that. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I mean, voodoo has become such a huge thing in New Orleans.
Yeah.
I don't think you could be in New Orleans and not be involved in it somehow.
Right, not be affected by it.
Wow.
Well, there's different levels of that, too, you know. I mean, there's the commercialized one where you go and you buy your mojo bag, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's more mystical, very mystical and very spiritual side to it, stemming from, like, you know, the religions of Africa, the animistic religions of Africa and stuff. So, you know, it's become commercialized, too, like everything.
But the roots of it are the same. It's putting yourself in tune with nature and, you know, putting your intention in tune with the energy of the earth, and that's how you bring things
right.
to happen.
Right.
It's not, you know, what people tell the tourists is, you know, here, take this yellow bag that's got stuff in it and put it in, you know, under your front door and then this thing will happen. I don't think that really happens without some sort of intention.
Well, yeah, I guess you're entering into the realm then of, like, subconscious suggestion, you know, that kind of thing, too. And it's always easier to make a suggestion to someone who already believes in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're more suggestible than to have some, you know, some white tourist go down and go, oh,
yeah,
you know, oh, sure, right, whatever. So there's a lot to be said for that, you know what I mean? Like, how much is coincidence, how much is your own, you know, suggestion, and how much is, or maybe you're really dealing with a powerful sorcerer, someone who can affect currents of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know.
I mean, I know there are a lot of people, especially outside of New Orleans, I think there are a lot of people who really don't believe in voodoo at all.
Yeah.
And in New Orleans, there are a lot of people who I think have seen it work, so they know.
Yeah.
They do believe in it. But when Rich went down to New Orleans, when he was doing that Sci-Fi Investigate episode, they did a whole show on voodoo. And he saw some things happen down there that, you know, he came home and said, I can't explain this except by saying it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to say.
You mean like healings or?
Just things. During a ritual, a priestess leaned over to him, and he actually couldn't hear her at first. She spoke very, very quietly, and there was a lot of yelling and singing and music and everything around them. And she said, just remember, water cuts through rock. And he asked her to repeat it because he wasn't sure he understood it, and he still didn't understand what she meant. And just as he was looking at her thinking, what on earth did that mean, somebody else came over from about 10 or 15 feet away where he could not possibly have heard because Rich could barely hear this woman. He came over and said, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this question just popped into my head. Is it water or rock? And Rich was so completely freaked. He said, how could you hear that? How could you hear what she said? And the other guy didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And when Rich told him the whole story, the next day, the other guy said, that wasn't real. You were joking with me, right? And he's like, no, I was freaked out by it. They were both freaked out by it.
Well,
and, you know, he'll still talk about that. He says, I couldn't tell you how that happened. We're not quite sure what it meant, but that was something.
And when was that? What was the date of that?
It was in July because they went down for the St. John's Day, was it? Festival?
Okay, so that was after the flood that cut through all the
rock. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was just last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so sorry, but we need to take another break. So
Okay. Everybody
think about that freaky story, and we'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to Through the Keyhole. I'm your host, Karen Dolan. Our guest today is Kalia Underhill, and we are talking about Wicca, and we've gotten onto all sorts of other related subjects. This is really great. Don't go away, everybody. See you in a few minutes. Related subjects. This is really great. Don't go away, everybody.
Thank you. I heard you do it, you know all the things we know. Won't you stand up for truth? Won't you turn away to?
Get your dose of truth with the Truth Hurts Radio Show with your host Charles Giuliani, Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The truth hurts. Ignorance kills.
What would you do if you?
Are you ready to know? The angels, ETs, and nightmares walk beside you. Are you ready to know that not only are you their creation, you may be them as well? Are you ready to know that you have been trapped in your own beliefs, in your own mind, and never knowing who and what you truly are? Let's explore these concepts and theories, and we'll hear what they have to say. Join us Sunday nights, 8 Pacific, 11 Eastern. I'm Joshua James, your host of Southern Lights and Paranormal Radio Network. See you Sunday.
Do you like to ask questions about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, you've got to listen to ICAR, that's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. I should know. I'm Irish.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I will tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, this is James Arthur Janchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth. We have a path of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire, a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits and test how it stands up to the many possibilities found in reality, all without pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here. No pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used to find the answer. A lack of contradiction to find the judge here. On Feet to the Fire. Sunday evenings. Live. Do you listen? www.feettofire.com for more information.
Perspective. We all have one. Our entire view of the world is based on it. Welcome to the Unabridged Universe. We invite you to set your perspective aside for a moment and join us on a refreshing journey into aspects of your universe that you may not have noticed from your particular point of view. Let host Jason Wilson be your guide into the corners of the universe you've never peeked into before. Who knows? You may just enjoy it and end up coming back for more. Take a stroll into the Unabridged Universe, live Saturdays from 7 to 9 Central Standard Time, only on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith.
Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Through the Keyhole. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and we're talking with Callia Underway about Wicca, paganism, and harvest festivals. We actually celebrated the Harvest Festival of Lammas yesterday, and one of the things we did, which I thought was really cool, was we made a model of Green Man. Callia, can you talk a little bit about what was the significance of making the Green Man at the Lammas Festival?
Well, he represents the god. You know, in our tradition, we have the male and female aspect of divinity. The female aspect, the goddess, is kind of the eternally present energy of the universe, the cosmic mother. And her active principle, who actually enters into physical manifestation, is called, you know, the god. And he is kind of like the essence of life, the essence, as the Green Man, the essence of life in nature. And so it's him, and this kind of makes too, we played the song John Barleycorn, which is a well-known old pagan song, even though maybe a lot of people don't realize how pagan it is. But John Barleycorn represents the spirit of life that's present in the food or the grain that's harvested from the field. So that spirit then is what nourishes us when, you know, John Barleycorn in the song, he is cut down. And it sounds, the song sounds like, and if people are familiar with it, maybe, too bad we should have played it or something. But,
yeah, I wish I'd thought ahead of time.
It's a great song. Let me see in my book. I can refer to some of it. This is a traditional English ballad, John Barleycorn, and I'll paraphrase it. It's very long, but the first line everybody knows. There were three men came out of the West, their fortune for to try, and these three men made a solemn vow, John Barleycorn must die. So right at the beginning, it sounds kind of like one of these gruesome English murder ballads, you know. But John Barleycorn, if you think about it, John Barleycorn is the spirit of the god, the spirit of life within nature, within grain. So, you know, they plow him, they cut his head off, like, you know, they're harvesting him. And then the whole song goes through what they do. They let him lie, they, you know, about how they separate the spiritual essence from the chaff of the wheat. And through a magical process, he becomes beer. You know, he becomes this intoxicating beverage. And so that, you know, that song has very many levels to it. It has the physical level about, you know, making beer out of barley, but it also has a spiritual level, which is kind of about, you know, the pagan spiritual way of extracting essence or spirit out of matter. And so at Lammas, then, we kind of venerate the god. The god goes through this whole process all through the year. We kind of talked about the cycle of the holidays previously, and he goes through this whole cycle of birth, growth, sacrifice at summer solstice, and then death, where he becomes our spiritual leader, I guess, or, you know, our symbol of hope. He becomes in the dark half of the year. And the transition point really is at Lammas. He kind of, you know, he's had his height of power at summer solstice. He's the king, the summer king. And then in the second half of the year, from summer solstice to winter solstice, he's the dark king, the winter king. So Lammas really is the first point in the cycle where he is now, he's died, really, at Lammas. He's gone into the grain, and we can access him, take his light within us by partaking of that, by partaking of the bread and the beer that we had. And so we had bread and we had beer, and we also had our Green Man, which we made out of all the plant material that everybody brought that they had harvested from their own gardens. We had vines and sunflowers and lavender and flowers, other wild flowers. And so we made his body out of this green material from the earth to kind of represent him to us during the year. And then at summer solstice, when he's all dried, we burn him in the fire as kind of a symbol of sacrifice. Where sacrifice meaning not even so much that, you know, we kill him, but that his physical body is transformed into, or his physical body is destroyed or opened so that the spiritual essence can come out. And I know that's kind of a very deep, you know, interpretation, but that's really what's going on. It's in the Harvest Festival.
Yeah, I was impressed that the one we made last night was so huge.
Yeah.
It was, like, full size.
Oh, yeah. He was, like, life size. Because somebody brought a huge armful of grapevines, which was just great. We'd never had one that big before.
Wow. It was very impressive.
Yeah.
Great.
It reminded me of, you know, one of my favorite movies is The Wicker Man. I don't know if you've seen that. Have you seen The Wicker Man?
Not in a really long time, but I remember really enjoying it.
Yeah.
I have to try it, you know, find it again.
Well, you have to watch it with a grain of salt, because the whole movie is very accurate, a very accurate depiction of, you know, Celtic pagan religious practice until the very end, when it turns into a horror film. You know, because it was made originally in 1973, it was made as a horror film for... all the time, not just on Sundays or whenever, you know, Saturdays, whenever we meet. So that when you eat grain, food from the earth, you should be thankful because the God has sacrificed, you know, his body so you can eat. Same with animals, you know, you should have to thank the Lord of animals for providing that physical matter to maintain your own body. Every time you drink beer, you should be thankful. You know, and wine.
Of us are.
Be thankful to the God, not to Mr. Bush, you know.
Right.
Anheuser-Busch, not the other Bush.
But it would take a great deal of beer to make me thankful to that Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. It's interesting. While you were talking, you know, made me think of the whole sacrifice God archetype, almost, and how many religions have this, some god of agriculture.
Right.
There is a sacrifice at some point.
Yep.
And this is where we're going to get a lot of Christians really angry with us, because Jesus is the sacrifice god.
Yeah.
Christians say.
Well, I mean, they can be angry, but the truth is the truth. He was called, you know, the fruit of the vine. He was often depicted on a cross with vine leaves and grape leaves and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's the whole... Sometimes when I do this in circle, we have the bread and the wine, and people who are recovering Catholics go, ooh, you know, ooh, it reminds me of Mass. But the truth is that this kind of ritual was going on way before, you know, the year 0 AD. It was a facet of all the ancient mystery religions. You know, Osiris in the ancient Egyptian religion was the same way. He was the god of the underworld, but he was also the agricultural god. When the Nile flooded the desert, you know, that was his waters were coming to fertilize the land so that they could grow food on it.
Yeah, and that's another case we were talking about earlier, agricultural societies, where, you know, it was really a matter of life or death.
Yeah.
I mean, we forget. Nowadays, we can just go down to the supermarket and buy food all winter if we need to.
Right.
But in Egypt, that was another area where, yeah, if the floods didn't come, or if they didn't flood enough, you
right.
might not have enough food to feed everyone that year.
Right. Yeah. You couldn't go to Walmart, you know,
yeah.
buy the jumbo bag of rice.
Oh.
So.
I love rice. I'm not a Walmart person.
Yeah, but at Walmart you can get the 42-pound bag of rice for $1.40.
The reason you can afford things there is that they don't pay their workers. They
yeah.
don't give them health insurance. I don't know. I have a hard time with that.
Yeah, that's a whole other show.
Yeah.
But the point is that, and I don't take this a little further. You know, when you buy the 40-pound bag of rice at Walmart for a dollar, you don't care if you waste half of it. You know,
right.
go buy more for a dollar. It doesn't
That's
matter.
Right.
You don't have the gratitude and the thankfulness for this gift of the earth that you've been giving, you know, that our ancient agricultural societies did have. They had a much more reverent, you know, feeling towards the earth because, you know, everything she gives us was a gift. So that's why John Barleycorn was such a beloved figure, I guess. Plus, you know, everybody in England, they really loved their ale,
yeah.
their barley ale. So,
well, beer was a ritual drink back as far as Egypt.
Yes.
I mean, they used beer instead of wine.
Yes, they did. That's very true. They had barley beer. They even had a goddess of beer. I can't remember her name, but the Israelites, the group of people who became the Jews, were originally pagan when they lived in Canaan, Canaanites, and they had a goddess of beer, too, before they became monotheistic. So this is a very, very ancient, what we celebrate at Lammas is a very, very, very ancient tradition that we are keeping, you know, getting back in tune with, I would hope.
So it reaches back nearly as far as we can across
yeah.
time, and it reaches across space in such that, you know, the pagan religion is putting yourself in tune with the earth and the earth's energy, and people all over the earth are doing that. And that was one of the things I really enjoyed about being part of the ceremony. You know, it was getting in touch with others who were doing the same thing all across the world, and also for centuries, back,
right.
you know, millennia. We don't even know how far back people celebrated this. And you were just adding another link to the chain. It was wonderful.
Yep. That is true, and I see it, you know, as my particular challenge is to bring this forward for our modern culture. So personally, I think it's needed in a very desperate way. You know, because a lot of pagans or people, you know, involved in this path, they like to go back, like, you know, an anachronism. They like to dress in the dress of our ancient Viking ancestors or whatever, you know, and do what they did and live as they did. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, I think that, you know, all of us modern Americans need to find how we can connect not only to the earth but to each other too. We're also cut off from each other.
Yeah.
To find this connection of life again. Otherwise, I think we will, you know, become like the bees.
Yeah, we'll all be disappearing and no one will know why.
Yeah.
Of course, in our case, it might be better for the earth if we did.
Well, but that's kind of the point. That's kind of the point, is that our human destiny, I think, is to, I don't know, improve the earth, I would hope, rather than, it may be hopeless at this point, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
here's a question on the message board to completely change the subject.
Okay.
What's the most popular Wiccan spell that is cast?
The most popular Wiccan spell that is cast.
Yeah. I mean, my guess would be healing. Well, I guess it would be love spells. You know, that was the first one I thought of, and then I thought, but you have that ethical thing. Well, is that one of those things that we all think, well, I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to anyway?
I think it's because that is like the most primal urge in all of us.
Yeah.
You know, that need for connection or love or acceptance, you know? And so I think that what drives, we all kind of have that ethical thing going on. Oh, well, I won't do it to harm anyone, you know? Or
yeah.
When we get in that desperate situation, you know,
just
the boyfriend is
hitting on us.
Yeah.
Please.
Go right to the voodoo doll, you know?
Yeah.
And we discussed this in our last show. There's a lot of, you know, that's a very murky topic with a lot of potential for trouble.
Yeah. It's one thing that people always ask about, though.
Yeah. I don't do spells at all.
You know, I was just about to say, is there even much spell work going on? You know, this is like people who are not real familiar with Wicca, who are not part of a group, maybe have this idea that this is what we do. We sit around, you know, casting spells all the time. But I don't really know many people who do much.
Well, there are people who do it a lot. And there are people, you know, and a lot of people that call themselves Wiccans do a lot of it. Because I think there's this idea that, you know, that's what we do. We're witches, we cast spells. There's so much more to it than that.
Yeah, most of the people I know...
The spell thing is kind of just, you know, the bottom rung of the ladder.
Yeah, most of the people I know do a lot more of the celebratory things, and it's to put yourself in tune with the spirituality of the earth.
Yeah.
Which in turn gives you this ability, really, to start affecting things.
Exactly. You have to start first.
And once you realize you can do that, it's very tempting.
Yeah. Because, and I, with my students, I make them go through a rather long period of purification and study, because if they start doing magic first, before they do that, the energy will warp them. You know, whatever, the energy just is energy. It's not good or bad. It's power. It's like electricity. It can either, you know, power your heart machine, your generator, or it can, you know, fry you, electrocute you. It's how it's contained in the vessel. So if your vessel is warped, you know what I mean? If you have impulses or desires that you don't have control over, and then you invite magic to come in, it's just going to amplify those things, and it will eventually come back on you and destroy you or warp you or cause you trouble. And I've seen that happen many, many, many times. So I just don't do spells anymore.
Yeah.
I try to work on, you know, other ways of affecting consciousness, you know, of changing my consciousness to affect a different manifestation in the physical world rather than starting with the physical world, you know?
Yeah.
And trying to work upwards from there.
Yeah, somebody's asking why we keep mixing voodoo and Wicca, and did we bring up voodoo again?
I don't think we're mixing them, no.
Yeah, I mean, this time we were talking about Wicca and spells. We weren't really talking about voodoo.
Well, it's pretty much the same thing, though. I mean, quite frankly, we weren't mixing
similar.
Them, but,
yeah,
but now I'm going to, because it's the exact same process.
Yeah, that's true. When you get down to the basics of how they work,
right?
Then, yeah, by putting yourself in touch with spirituality, then, yeah, you do get to a point where you can start to manipulate energy and you can start to manipulate things that happen. But voodoo is one way of doing it, and Wicca is very different.
Well, it's actually the exact same process. It's just different cultural framework of reference.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about the materials that you'd use for one or the other.
Yeah.
If you were watching someone do the two, they would look very different. Although
right.
The underlying principles that make them work are the same.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they both use herbs. They both use candles. They both use chants. This is pretty much the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, voodoo being a particularly southern, you know, African kind of manifestation uses things particular to that culture.
Okay, on that note, we are going to take our last break. And so you are listening to Through the Keyhole. I'm Karen Dolan. My guest is Kalia Underhill. And we're having a really cool discussion on paganism, Wicca, now we're adding in voodoo. So don't go away. We'll be right back in a few minutes, guys.
The Unabridged Universe. We invite you to set your perspective aside for a moment and join us on a refreshing journey into aspects of your universe that you may not have noticed from your particular point of view. Let host Jason Wilson be your guide into the corners of the universe you never peeked into before. Who knows? You may just enjoy it and end up coming back for more. Take a stroll into the Unabridged Universe, live Saturdays from 7 to 9 Central Standard Time. Only on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Through the Keyhole on Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Karen Dolan. My guest today is Calia Underhill, and we're talking about Wicca and paganism. I've got somebody with their hand up. It keeps going up and down. I'd like to know what this person would like to say. So we're going to try to take a live call here. And when you come on, if you could just tell me your name and where you're from, and I'd like to hear your question. Nope, maybe we're not able to get it. Okay. Nope, I guess not. It looks like we're not able to take that. The hand keeps going down again, so I guess we can't get them. If anybody does have questions or comments, I'd like to hear what they are. You can either hop on the message board, the chat room at paltalk.com, or you can email me at kdolan@rochester.rr.com. Okay, I thought we were going to try to take it again, but I guess not. Okay, let's see. We were talking about Lammas and Harvest Festivals, and we actually just had a really nice celebration of Lammas yesterday. For anybody who's coming in late and missed the earlier part of the discussion, we had a really very nice circle, and we made a green man, and we danced to John Barleycorn, which is a wonderful, wonderful song. If anybody has not heard this, go out and get it. You know, and if you're doing a Lammas celebration, you need to hear this song. It's really wonderful. Great story, great sound. Who recorded that? What group was that? John Renbourn?
That was the John Renbourn group. Most people are familiar with the version that was recorded by the group Traffic.
Traffic, there we go.
That's 60s or 70s, or late 60s, early 70s with Steve Winwood. And that's the one we all heard, you know, like while we were listening to our records.
Yeah, we all grew up hearing that.
Oh, yes, records. I remember those.
Yeah,
putting the record on the record turntable.
Yeah, of course, my kids don't know what records are. But
yeah.
Well, they look like CDs, but they were bigger.
Yeah, right. And in fact, like, I've been interested in this since I was, 12 or 13. But I heard that album because I was into that kind of classic rock. And the song came on, and I remember on the album cover, you know, they used to have album covers back then, and liner notes. On the album cover it said, here's a song about the harvest tradition in England, or maybe it's about something else, ... you know? And so, of course, I was like, well, what? What's it about? And that was kind of my first introduction. That was probably in high school that this whole thing started to click, you know, in my head. Oh, there's deeper meaning. There's secret, you know, meanings to a lot of this stuff. And but the Traffic one is kind of long and slow. There's a lot of other versions that you could find. The one I got, you know, after I listened to Traffic, I got into the English folk rock stuff, like a group called, interestingly enough, Pentangle, which John Renbourn was the lead guitarist of. He's a fantastic fingerstyle guitarist that, you know, I just can't say enough about him. He's my own personal Jesus, you know, if I'm allowed to say that.
I love that group. Isn't Jackie McShee?
Jackie McShee. I saw them actually a year or two ago. They were at Harmony House, which is this place in Webster. You know, local people will get that. But they actually had them. They were on tour, and I nearly, like, you know, melted into a puddle at his feet. You know, as he signed I bought the album with John Barleycorn on the CD now. You know, I bought the CD, and he signed it, and I was like, you know, falling all over myself. But so there was, and then Fairport Convention with Sandy Denny. They did a lot of these old mystical songs. So there was kind of this whole secret tradition among those musicians at that time to bring these songs back and record them in a folk rock setting that would appeal to modern audiences. So so those are two versions of John Barleycorn you could get, Traffic and John Renbourn, and I'm sure there's other ones too. If you went to, like, you know, the internet song sites, I'm sure you could find them. Just type in the title John Barleycorn. Or sometimes they're called John Barleycorn Must Die.
Yeah, or the Ballad of John Barleycorn.
The Ballad of John, yep. There's, in fact, that's a whole other show, doing the songs. There's a whole bunch of songs that are related to this kind of pagan mystic.
Ooh, there's a thought.
Tradition.
That'd be fun. We could play them on the air, too, and then we could talk about them.
Oh, yeah, there's great ones. Tam Lin and Thomas the Rhymer. And they all sound really intense. You know, they're all about, like, murder and, you know.
Yeah.
Deception and the fairies come and steal them away and all this stuff. But there's a lot underneath in the symbolism of it that we can use.
Yeah, and what was the Lorena McKenna, oh gosh, the Lady of Shalott.
Oh, yeah.
Lorena McKenna did that.
Yeah.
You know, the first time I listened to that, I, of course, had never read the poem in college. You know, Rich had read it. He had it. And I listened to the song and I thought, oh my God, it's all about paganism.
Right.
I mean, it's all, there's so much magical symbolism in there.
Right.
What?
Right, and she recorded that, and she became that album. She had several albums before that, but I remember when that album came out, it was like 92 or 3, and that she just took off in the pagan community because they recognized that. And of course, you know, she had other songs like Samhain Night and that kind of thing. That she recognized that the symbolism was important about the lady with the mirror who is, you know, the form of the goddess and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And things always happen in threes. She did three things, she saw three things, and then the curse.
Well, if you read Tennyson or Yeats, a lot of these poets, these English poets, well, Yeats was Irish, but, you know, they were kind of keeping the flame of that ancient Celtic philosophy alive in their poetry, so they're worth reading, you know, if you can get through it.
Yeah.
Tennyson's very long, you know, but...
Yeah, I was never really interested in poetry until fairly recently, and I started reading some Yeats. Actually, Rich is very much interested in Yeats. He had a whole book of Yeats poetry when I met him, and I couldn't believe how beautiful it was.
Yeah. Well, and there's some musicians who've set his poems to music, and they're really, you know, perfect, perfectly set to Celtic music. There's also someone you have to read, his name was William Sharp, but his pen name was Fiona MacLeod, who also wrote a lot of Celtic mystical poems. He's kind of been rediscovered lately, too. So.
Yeah. And, of course, Yeats was also involved in ceremonial magic. He was a member of the Golden Dawn.
He was involved with the Golden Dawn. But at that time, the Golden Dawn was kind of the wear-all and be-all of English mysticism or occultism. It really was, everybody who's anybody was connected with that in some way, so I wouldn't call him a ceremonial magician, but he was in that crowd, you know.
The idea that Golden Dawn was a ceremonial magical group.
It was. But you know, England, in America we don't understand how big we are, you know what I mean? England's a small country. Everybody knew each other over there. Everybody, you know.
Yeah.
So, and they still do. It's like the size of, I don't know, what is it, the size of New Jersey or something?
Something like
no,
that.
No, it's bigger than that, but.
It's prettier than New Jersey, though.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm from New Jersey, so I can say that.
I was just going to say, I mean, you would know.
Well, the ironic thing, going off on a totally different tangent, is that, you know, New Jersey was the Garden State. So it originally was beautiful.
Yeah.
Until the chemical plants started polluting the rivers.
Oh, let's see. People are looking for more examples of Celtic music. If you like Celtic pagan music, you have to go to Lorena McKenna.
Lorena McKenna. Yep, go to the old English folk group. So that would be Pentangle, Fairport Convention, Steel Eye Span.
Oh, Steel Eye Span, I forgot about them.
Yep.
Wow, I haven't heard their music in years.
Yep. And the people who were involved in those groups kind of did their own projects here and there. So if you look up June Tabor, she did, I can't think of the other girl's name. She and the other lady, Maddie, oh, I can't think of her name, I'm blanking.
Oh.
But they did an album called Silly Sisters, the two of them together.
Yeah, I remember
Maddie Pryor. Let's see. So that's the English pagan tradition.
I'm trying to think of any other. I mean, I have a lot of Irish and Scottish folk music, but not much pagan stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess when I want pagan, I go for Lorena McKennitt, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of modern. I mean, if you're looking for modern pagan, you could do the Gwydion Penderwyth stuff.
Yeah. Enya and Clenna, do they do pagan music? I mean, I know they're really beautiful, and they make great background music.
Yeah, I wouldn't. They're not outwardly pagan.
Okay.
No.
But totally acceptable, you know.
Yeah.
Just not.
There's a good CD I got called The Best of Pagan Song, and I can't tell you who puts it out.
It
just moved, and it's in my box somewhere.
When it turns up.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I may be able to find it. Let me see.
I used to have one called Dark Ships in the Forest, and that was all songs about the supernatural.
Yep. You could also do, you know who's doing pagan music is Ritchie Blackmore, who used to be the guitarist with Deep Purple.
Really?
Ritchie Blackmore, yep, and he's got some girl who sings, and I can't think of her name.
Purple.
Some girl, it's not a girl, it's a woman, who's got a beautiful voice. He's done a lot of good albums.
Well, if we're, you know, leaning over towards Deep Purple, then you have to remember Jethro Tull.
Jethro Tull,
everybody
the pagan album,
that.
Songs from the Wood, can't beat that.
I was just thinking the other day, I wonder where I can find that on CD so I can put it on my iPod. And I thought, how weird.
Yeah.
How to put these old pagan songs on my iPod.
Well,
wow.
And how you're showing your age, because you don't have to have the CD to put on your iPod.
I know.
You could just go to iTunes. I learned this from my 10-year-old daughter.
I know.
You could just go to iTunes and download.
I know.
Or Walmart.com, you know.
I know.
Oh, but we're back to Walmart again. Wait a
minute. I can't do Walmart.
Okay, The Best of Pagan Song is put out by Serpentine Music. Serpentinemusic.com.
Serpentinemusic.com.
Yep.
And I have to go to all these sites now when I'm done. I'm gonna go check these out.
Yeah, this is like a compilation album that was put together by somebody who I think is connected with Starhawk or was connected with Starhawk. So. Yeah, Jethro Tull, you can't. My daughter hates that album. She's like, oh, you're playing the pagan music again!
Well, that's another one. You know, my husband had it when I met him.
Yeah.
And I never thought about it. I'd never come across it before. And he was playing it one day, and I thought, did you hear what he's saying? Do you know what he's saying?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, it's all pagan.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
But he's like a major artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Jethro Tull doing pagan songs? I didn't know that.
And here's the connection. Ritchie Blackmore... I think it's on Ritchie Blackmore's album. I think it's called Ghost of a Rose. But he and Ian Anderson do a duet, a guitar and flute duet, which is really, you know, just, they're another two of my, you know, personal gods. So.
Wow. Well, I'm going to be busy long into the evening tonight tracking down music.
Yeah.
Because I know I'll find everything we talked about in, like, the first 10 minutes, because it's so easy to find things now. But then I'm going to get... You know, I'll find all this other stuff, too, and start rooting around and cross-referencing different websites.
Yep, spending tons of money.
No kidding. I find some of these sites, and then, you know, they always give you more suggestions.
Right.
So it's like, well, here's the thing you looked at, and then there are these others. And that's what does me in. I can lose hours on these sites.
I know.
But you find the most wonderful stuff, too.
Yep. I know, and that's how I found out a lot about, you know, these things that I know about, because... Back in the days when he had record albums, you know, you went to the store and you bought your record album, and that's what you got. And nowadays, you go to Amazon or whatever, and they have, you know, all kinds of different things for you to look at.
We used to go to a store over at the Village Gate, the Bob Shop, at the Village
Gate
in Rochester. And the guy there, I would go and find an album, and I'd say, well, maybe I'd buy it, but I don't know how it is. And the guy working there would say, oh, you want to hear that? Okay, bring it over. And he'd put it on.
Yeah. That's the old style.
Yeah,
clue.
Who does that now?
Yeah. Well, I guess if you go to, like, Barnes & Noble, you can listen to it on the headphones.
Well, that's true. They have all the computerized things.
Yeah.
But they don't have, like, a guy who will open up the album and put it on the record player behind the counter so you can hear it.
Right, and tell you about it and tell you about the artist and suggest other things.
Yeah. Wow, I feel so old now.
Well, you know, you're not old, you're experienced.
Yeah. I was just telling my kids the other day that good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment.
That's very profound.
I love that. I saw it on a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
I wish I could take credit for that.
You just have to survive your bad experience,
yeah.
Your bad judgment, that's all.
Yeah. It was really great. So I was telling them, you know, there are no failures in life unless you make a mistake. Mistakes are not failures, but they become failures if you don't learn from them.
Yeah.
So I said, make your mistakes and just pay attention and,
yep,
you know, get something out of it and then you're okay.
Try again in the next cycle.
Yeah.
That's the
nice thing about that wheel of the year.
And this is a perfect segue into the Harvest Festival because it's the seed, right? What are you harvesting from that mistake? What are you taking from it? Take the good way.
Right.
And harvest, you know, the chaff gets blown away or flailed away. You take the good part, the kernel, and plant it for the next cycle so you grow a better plant.
And that's why I like the symbol of the spiral.
Right.
Too. That's one of my favorite symbols because it's, you know, you're going, I always picture it as going around the year again and again, doing the same thing again and again, but each time you're making a little bit of progress.
Right.
I like that. You're not following in your exact footsteps. You're a little bit bigger each time. I really like that a lot.
Yep. The circle never ends. It just keeps on evolving.
Yeah. Goodness. I think we've got a really good spot to wrap it up here, actually. Be winding down just naturally, and I think I'm going to be very organic and say, you know what? I think you're settled.
Very good.
This is just the
harvesting point of this show.
Yeah.
We've gathered in all of our wheat.
I wish I had a recording of John Barleycorn I could just put on.
Yeah.
Play that for the rest.
I should have lent you that one that I had.
Well, you know, I didn't think of it.
Yeah, me neither.
Okay. So next time, I promise, I'll be more prepared. I'll get in touch with the producer earlier, and I'll have a whole list of music, and I'll be really, really all together. And, I will do better next time. But I had a really great time talking with you, Kalia. I really always enjoy our conversations together.
Me too. It's fun. It's not even, I don't even have to, you know, think about it. It just flows.
Well, see, that's what amazes me. So many people and so many topics. You know, you want to do a radio interview, you have to kind of do your homework and check your notes, and you don't. You just get on and chat.
Right. No, I'm just a repository of trivial information.
Boy. Okay, well, thank you so much for being on the show again.
You're very welcome. I hope people have enjoyed it and got something out of listening to it, and I hope I can do it again sometime.
Well, I certainly hope so, too. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Through the Keyhole today. It's been really great. And everybody go and celebrate Lammas. You still have time. Technically, it's the 31st, right, which is Tuesday.
It could be any time, yeah.
So
you'd celebrate it on August 1st. But
so that's Wednesday.
Yeah, any of those days would be appropriate. Any time this week would be fine.
And we've got a full moon working right now, too, don't we? Is it full now or coming up? Or?
I have to check the calendar, but I'd say if it's not today, then tomorrow.
So good time to have a nice outdoor bonfire celebration for lunch.
Bonfire, yep. Drink your beer and eat your bread.
Yeah.
Toast dance
on barleycorn. Okay. Thanks, Kalia.
You're welcome.
Thanks, everyone, and have a great weekend. We'll be talking to you next week. Kalia.
You're welcome.
Thanks, everyone, and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.